Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 30. Yep, nothing special. It's just like another number. Maybe when it gets to 32, that sounds more interesting. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me this evening we have Ken.
Hello.
And we have Mike.
Hello.
Starting things off as usual, last movies watched. What have you been watching recently, Ken?
Bunch of shit.
Well.
Stu? No, I'm just kidding. Alright, A Life of Ninja. This is a sweet film. Directed by Leigh So Nam. Director of Shaolin vs. Llama. Is it Shaolin vs. Llama or Against Llama?
Shaolin vs. Llama.
Yeah.
I tend to confuse it with another movie called Shaolin Against Llama, I think. Anyway, Leigh So Nam's movie was actually in English distributed by Phil Mark, the famous cut and paste ninja people. But A Life of Ninja is the complete film. It's just distributed by Phil Mark, and they presumably did the English dub for it. And it's suitable to have an English dub for A Life of Ninja because it's quite a cheesy film. Has its problems, and it's and is very much wonderful as well. And it's fun because Lee seems to aim for like a fine depiction of ninjutsu in the opening reel, describing various arts and you know, the history of the ninja, basically. And after a few of these sequences, yeah, that looks pretty authentic. Then it cuts to what apparently is a very important part of becoming a ninja, and that is wrestling in mud. Specifically, females wrestling in mud. And on a path he has set us with A Life of Ninja. Then it goes into its plot, which is probably the weakest aspect of the film because it's a straight-faced plot played with extreme seriousness in a way. But it's about Chen Quan Tai plays a ninja expert who is brought in as an advisor to the cops and a bodyguard to a company boss who is targeted by the Iga clan, who is led by Yusuaki Kurata. And he leads from a suitably smoky hideout in a cave. Looks very, very atmospheric. And you know, the movie bores when it deals with the plot, but comes to life wonderfully well whenever ninja appears, really, which is a testament to the energy that Lee brings to the movie. Mm-hmm. For instance, there's quite a fun hokey scene at the beginning where the narrator describes the ninjas, they operate in the dark, and then he suitedly cuts to a shot where they operate in daylight. Oops. And it's also must be known that the female ninjas have their specific tactics aside from wrestling in mud, and that's being female, you can flash your opponent and therefore win over your opponent in quite a sleazy way. And therefore, Leigh So Nam's frame of mind is perfectly tuned and correct, and it's fresh and sleaze all around for basically, let's say, 70% of the film. The other 30% are quite boring. But for a ninja flick, it's still above average because it tries a little bit more. And it knows also to please an audience looking for fun. And Chen Quan Tai did a few movies with Leigh So Nam on the subject, so to say. The movie after this, or rather the same year, A Challenge of the Lady Ninja, which is a great film. He's in that, as well as Elsa Jung, who is in A Life of Ninja as well. So he's I like Leigh So Nam. He knows how to be hokey in a way. I firmly believe he knows what he's doing, rather than, well, I tried to make a serious masterpiece, but it ended up like this. I thought the female mud wrestling had substance. but it ended up being as hokey as it is. So. And right before the podcast started, I finished a Shaw Brothers movie for once. So I might as well direct this question to Mike Banner. Have you seen Usurpers of Emperor's Power?
No, I haven't. That was from one of the last batches, wasn't it? Of the IVR releases.
Well, it was in 2007. That shouldn't be too incorrect. Don't know if this has a rumor or not as being a classic, but I can tell you it isn't.
Oh, I've heard it's pretty good.
No, it should. to mimic Adam Terrell a little bit. But it's quite, it has its opportunities. It's directed by the director of Inframan, which is one of my favorite Shaw Brothers films. Hua Sham. I haven't followed his career otherwise, if he, made a living making colorful hokey movies or switched genres, but when you for once get the whole picture and almost keep track of the entire range of characters in a swordplay movie like this, or Wucha, and that also deals with power struggles, it's like a shame in such a weak movie. In short, it's about one evil prince and one good prince fighting for the throne, and the evil prince, he wants to assassinate his brother, which is played by Max Mock, but there's an agreement some made once upon a time that if he himself assassinates his brother, he can't claim the throne, so he needs to find some ways to sneakily make him die or make him disappear. And in the middle of this is like the sole interesting character in the film, a character called Chembo, played by an actor I've been exposed to quite a lot recently, Lung Tianxiang. Don't know what he's been in terms of classic movies and stuff, but he plays like a master that hovers between loyalties in a way. You don't know really where he's at, and that's the sole intriguing aspect of the film. So it could have been saved in a way if the lightning fast pace that it has and the coherency that it has in terms of, I Got It, which is a big win in itself. But the action scenes is really way too quickly edited and shot as well. Mm-hmm. So you don't really know the kind of creativity that's on display because it goes so fast. And when it only has like a reasonably interesting power struggle plot and incoherent action scenes, there's nothing really there. But I do have to mention there are two scenes, the ones that are visible, that are quite wonderful. There, in one scene, they are some people are walking through a forest, and that forest is full of traps, and their horse gets horribly skewered by like 20 spears.
Oh.
But it's a fake horse, obviously. But one of the techniques that this master that I told you about uses makes characters basically spurt blood from every part of their body, which is quite cool. But towards the end, there's like a slight interest that comes along that talks about like the dark aspects of characters engaged in power struggles and the kind of betrayal that goes on, but it's a little too late for that by that point. Short and sweet, but still not very interesting. And if you want to complete your Shaw Brothers cycle or your movies and your Wucha library, then by all means pick it up, but don't expect a classic.
Okay. What you been seeing, Mike?
You know what? Nothing.
Not even Red Belt?
No, oh. I couldn't convince my girlfriend to go and see that.
Terrible.
I was like, oh, is this film Red Belt? She was like, oh, what's that about? I said, well, it's about this jiu-jitsu master.
Martial arts?
Yeah, she went, I knew I'd lost her straight away. I shouldn't have opened with that. I should have thought about it and creatively, and, snuck it in at the end. Well, it's a drama about this guy, and then at the end it's jujitsu. And you know, maybe
free popcorn.
Yeah. Yeah, she wasn't having any of it. To be honest, I think I touched, well, you know, I mentioned this kind of last path. I've had a bit of a kind of burnout, a movie-related burnout, what with kind of, you know, having my own DVD business and watching the same film about 50 times and having watched films to review before and things like that. I think I've just got a little bit bored with it. So I've just been, you know, pottering away with my other hobbies. Watching TV series, actually. I mean, stuff on telly, but also watching Seinfeld.
Right.
And Flight of the Conchords.
Ah.
A lot of the time. Because Seinfeld, I mean, this isn't Asian at all, but fuck it. Seinfeld, I almost never actually find it, like, gut-bustingly funny or anything. It doesn't have me rolling around laughing. But there's something about it, something about the setup and the characters and the tone that I just find really, I know, it's really enjoyable and comforting. It's a really easy watch. And so I'm happy at night time, usually when I'm in bed, just to flick on my Seinfeld DVD and watch a few episodes. But Flight of the Conchords is actually gut-bustingly funny, I think, a lot of the time. And that show is absolutely hilarious. And a lot of the songs too. Yeah, the songs are excellent. Not so, I mean, not just because they're funny, but they're actually well-constructed songs as well. Definite talent there. So, unfortunately, on the Asian front, off the top of my head, I can't actually think of anything I've watched recently.
But you must be saving money, therefore, not buying DVDs and not watching any of the ones in the pile.
Well, that's true. Well, seeing as my girlfriend is in Hong Kong, yep, I'm going to get her to grab me some Korean TV series. Hopefully legit. But she is going to Beijing, so who knows. And I've narrowed it down to three. Now, one of them, I'm not entirely sure why I picked it. The other two, one of them is pretty self-evident from what, you know, my, as you know, my film taste to be in terms of Asian cinema. And three is going to be blindingly obvious once I tell you a little bit about it. Right, so the first one is called Couple or Trouble, or Forbidden Love, or however many different AKAs there are for it. And it's a Korean romantic comedy. And it's kind of based on a 1987 Hollywood film called Overboard,
oh,
which stars Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Oh.
I see the concept already, lasting for 40 episodes.
Yeah, so it's like a kind of, I imagine, spoiled, possibly a bit annoying American-Korean girl. Princess who's on a boat, she has to bust up with her husband, possibly falls in love with some kind of rough handyman. They both go overboard. To be totally honest, I'm not entirely sure why I've got it, but I thought, fuck it, looks alright.
You'll have it overboard.
And actually, I do remember now, I remember looking at it thinking, okay, this seems alright, a romantic comedy. Me and Jen might be able to get down with that. I'd heard it was all right. And then, bizarrely, the day before, I remember we were in HMV, or some other shop, and Jen said, ooh, I like that film, pointing to Overboard. Which kind of came out of left field. I was like, what?
Fate.
So, yeah, Fate. Now, the second one is Jumong, which is a big Korean historical epic. So it's kind of, you know, people with swords, romance, skullduggery, sword
kind of like
fights.
Musa.
Yeah.
Alright.
So a big, like, TV kind of epic. And it was, you know, smashed the ratings out the park in Korea. It was one of the most watched series ever. And it's certainly going to give me something to do and occupy some time, as there are 81 episodes.
Fuck me.
So what, is it like the hour-long drama or something?
I think they're 40 or 45 minutes. All right. Per episode.
And that's one season?
It's one story. It's one.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's finished after that. There isn't a next season.
No, that's it. It's 81 episodes long.
That's not too bad.
Okay. So it's pretty beefy. And then the last one is called I know that actually. I got this a bit wrong. I called the other one Forbidden. Was it called Forbidden Love as well? I think this one's called Forbidden Love. Either way.
It's Those Were the Days syndrome, if you go back to Hong Kong cinema. Every other movie for a few years was called Those Were the Days. Forbidden Love.
But this one is based on I'm reading the plot synopsis here, based on the legend of an old fox that loves men but is betrayed by them. Now, this isn't fox as in, you know, meaning to mean hot lady. This is fox.
As
brilliant.
The animal.
As in fox. So it's like a lady who's actually like a fox. Brilliant. The drama introduces a new type of love conflict, but by portraying the hostile but unbreakably doomed relationship between a man and an old fox. It is different from the typical antagonism between the good and the bad, containing the general conception that an old fox is an enemy of man. Through a story, the drama aims to create a new and striking hero, appealing to not only the young viewers, the main target, but also the older generation.
I'm sure it's good, but that was too complex for regular people. If you read out on the back of a box, it's like, words. Get to the action, get to the meat, damn it.
You want to see the love scene between the man and the fox?
Yeah.
The slow motion run through the field, the hug and kiss.
An entire episode, entire 40, 45 minutes. Episode 1 through 20.
So awesome. I'm fascinated by that. It's supposed to be like a kind of an action. A big kind of young cast action series.
Mm-hmm.
With a fox.
Well, a serious question though. Do you know, Mike, if like the big name movie talents usually appear in like the big TV series as well? Well, you know, maybe Choi Min-sik and, you know, Song Kang-ho, these kind of guys.
Well, I have to say, I don't really know a lot about I've watched a fair few Korean films, but I'm not really into it. So if there were any big Korean stars, apart from like, you know, Jun Ji Hyun or something in these TV series, I wouldn't be able to pick them out anyway. Unless, like, you know.
Well, I think those are the only like two male actors that I know of. Choi Min-sik of Old Boy and Mr. Sung Kang-ho or Song Kang-ho from, you know, JSA, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance,
stuff like that.
Yeah, Ken, I found a synopsis that might be more to your liking.
Fox kills man.
Ninja foxes. Episodes. Shi Yeon is a nine-tailed fox living undercover in the human world. By day, she is an employee at a natural history museum. By night, she's a top-ranking woman warrior in the nine-tailed fox clan, charged with preserving the delicate balance between man and fox. Interesting. But a world is sent spinning when an atrocious serial murder, where the victims have had their internal organs gouged out, is uncovered. Detective Min-woo believes the murders may relate to the organ trafficking trade and goes undercover in a seedy organ smuggling ring. But Min-woo's cover is blown, and it's only through the intervention of nine-tailed fox warrior Mu-young and Shi-yun that he's able to survive. But he's seen their true identities as nine-tailed foxes. Can he be allowed to live?
And that is a TV show? Well,
yep, 16 episodes.
Okay, nice and nimble. Why not?
Is it awesome? Is that like, you know, fox clans, fox, action, organ trafficking? Sounds like a good watch to me.
To their credit, I mean, they're not relying, it seems like, solely on like the soap opera style TV show making. Which seems to be the case in Hong Kong whenever you hear of, you know, the more popular TV shows that they spew out on a regular basis. I mean, obviously, we talked about Fearless and stuff like that being, you know,
as well, I don't regard that as soap opera.
Yeah, exactly. I've actually been thinking of seeing that. I wasn't a big fan of Seven Swords, the movie, but maybe the show will have a chance to make matters a bit more coherent.
Yeah.
A couple of trusted people told me that the Seven Swords TV series is very, very good.
lots of good talent behind the camera, as well as, well, in front of the camera at least. Choi Man-chuk, and but you know, Marco Mack is directing, Clarence Falk, and people like that. So supposedly quite high budget, not like, you know, shot on a camcorder kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, Korea seems like an interesting place for TV series. You know, unless they give us like 10 more Fox series, then we can call them versatile. You know.
So that's my McCrew.
Oh, okay.
that's McCrew finished.
And be sure to remember exactly what name you appointed to that segment. And make sure you get it right every single week.
Mm-hmm.
We will be watching you.
So, for me this week, I chose to watch The Cheaters, directed by Billy Chung, starring Jordan Chan, Alex Fock, Sonia Kwok, Simon Liu, Ken Wong, and Chat Man Too.
Cheaters as in cheating, or the animal?
Cheaters, as in they're called men.
They're good
cancer. Foxes.
It might work in Korea, but not in Hong Kong. But yep, it's pretty boring actually. It's a shame because I went and deliberately bought a bunch of what I would consider as films that look, well, basically not judging the book by its cover, and just going by sort of the talent in the film. Yeah, it didn't work for this film. I thought it was okay. Like, I always think Jordan Chan's a good selling point when it comes to a film for me. But it was just really boring. It was just, it's got Alex Fong in it, who is usually not bad, but when watching this film, I'm pretty sure, like, a sheet of card would be far more amusing than him. There's just something about him in that film just pisses me off. He's lying there, like, it's basically a sex scene, but he's just lying there, expressionless. Like, not participating. And I just want to slap some emotion into the bastard. And I'm looking at the cover, and each expression on his face is identical. Saying that, the same picture's used twice, but...
Or is it?
Exactly. I'm trying to find something good to say about it, but I'm just not getting there. Billy Chung supposedly done some pretty gritty stuff in the past, or maybe after this film.
Yeah, still doing. Decent lo-fi director.
Yeah. And this was sort of like one of my reasons why I should go for it, but I think I kind of chose the wrong film. But saying that, it was the scriptwriters was Edmund Pang, who's like we kind of know and love for the AV Med Sullivan Black movies. I kind of thought this is like at least the story should be interesting, but it just never picks up for me. So yeah, The Cheaters, coming to an Asian bay near you.
Well, I looked up the notes on the film that I made. I don't remember anything from the film. I seem to remember mentioning like slight positives, but you know, overall it's quite a boring film. But there was some decent scenes of tension here and there. But bear in mind, I'm saying here and there, like 3 or 4 minutes of the film, pretty decent. But I got it in a trade and just watched it and forgot about it quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yet another of the Billy Chung low-budget films, and the production company, I think, is headed in some shape or form by Simon Liu.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the company now, but it usually is a logo, like a Reservoir Dogs-esque logo, of, you know, all the guys in silhouette and stuff. And, you know, they still get employment, though, so, I mean, they're not... They're testing out the waters in a way. I look at it that way. I mean, that's no excuse for making bad movies, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But Simon Liu and Billy Chung, they sporadically make good movies. I mean, Simon Loy as an actor too, I like him on occasion.
And this was actually like one of my other purchases, which was sort of just random and went by the cast. I was going to say, after watching Cheaters, it's kind of troubled me for watching Killer. And when I'm looking at the case now, it's got three of the same lead actors, director and scriptwriter. I am now very worried.
Well, in terms of Billy Chung recommendations, though, you have to go quite long, long back to the 90s, beginning 90s. One movie, Love to Kill, which is a great Category 3 movie, one of the better ones with Anthony Wong and Elizabeth Lee, I believe. Anthony Wong plays like an abusive husband. He even chains his wife to the wall in one sequence. Quite a good and gory atmospheric film. And also, I might remember this wrong, so I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I think Billy Chung directed the Category 3 swordplay movie, The Assassin. I think Max Mock was in that, and the mainland actor Shang Fengyi, who was in Farewell My Concubine with I remember The Assassin being quite cool and gritty and really utilizing the Category 3 rating well for making like a wuxia swordplay movie set in the desert. You know, it was quite a grimy film, a gritty film. I looked up my review now. It is indeed Billy Chung. So I would recommend The Assassin if you can find it. Not to be confused with the classic Shaw Brothers movie, The Assassin, with the Ying Wang Yu.
Right.
I might as well ask Mike too. Have you seen The Assassin, Mike? The Chang Chia film.
Yes, I have.
What do you think of it?
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, good film. Pretty, dark. And a bit of a bummer, I would suggest, by the end of it.
Yeah. Not a fun time, but still, you know, the one of those times where it's substance to the Chang Chia film, the way I like it. And Yimmy Wang Yu and Chang Chia was obviously a magic combination back then. So.
Yeah.
But this recent The Assassin is not a remake. It's, you know, it just carries the same English title.
So joining us this evening, we have POF community member, Tons of Fun.
Hello.
There we are. So for our questions tonight, we have one from Drunken Master, the faithful community member, and his question is, some films are guilty of having style over substance, although I enjoy them myself. A few Choi Hark films come to mind for me. But what would you class as the most visually entertaining and yet substantially shallow experiences as far as Hong Kong or even Asian cinema in general goes? Ken?
Well, I had a little bit of think of this, and I couldn't come up with many examples, but one, every time this question is brought up, one always springs to mind, and it's still Legend of Zoo. Because I still don't know what the fuck goes on in that movie, but I love it. The pretty colors are fun. And, you know, it's suitable that he mentions Choi Hark in the question because he's a prime example at times for better or worse. I mean, moving on from Legend of Zoo, look at Time and Tide. I don't remember anything about that film other than it being like a cool little spectacle. But if it had something to say, I don't know what the fuck that was. And so I think that's the prime examples of me. I'm going to mention a few other personal ones. Out of the Choi Hark camp came Marco Mack, who was the Choi Hark's editor for quite a few years and now directs movies on his own, and he has that sort of MTV style to his movies, but it's still often enjoyable in a way, depending on the movie. It can still be a very shallow experience where he's utilizing that MTV style in a desperate way. I mean, there's many directors in that regard. And also recently the largely unmentioned Bullet and Brain. I quite highly enjoyed. Didn't say anything that film other than let's have some fun and be like a visual ride as well. But if I were to direct my, you know, critical eye towards anyone, I think, without having seen their entire range of movies, the Pang brothers probably falls in line with all this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, having seen The Eye 2, Leave Me Alone, and I'm about to see Recycle, I think it I think it happens quite often that the Pang brothers get slammed for being style over substance, and obviously that happens now in America as well with The Messengers and Bangkok Dangerous getting little good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm mainly looking at Hong Kong. I'm not too clued into Japan and Korea and what shallow visualists they have there. Well, I guess I'm forgetting about Jingle Ma, by the way. Jingle Ma must always be mentioned, and I just figured out the movie from his that should be mentioned. Fly Me to Polaris. Polaris.
Okay. I had another film in mind, but...
Not Tokyo Raiders, though.
Tokyo Raiders, maybe?
Hmm?
Star Raiders, maybe?
That was my answer.
You guess.
I love the giant novelty combs.
We all do.
So for me, I think, well, as they've mentioned, when it comes to Choi Hark, I did kind of think Seven Swords. Although that film was the original cut, something like 7 hours.
Well, he claimed that, but then he claimed that I'm happy with the movie as it is right now, but the movie was, for me anyway, totally incoherent.
Mm-hmm. It was sort of like 7 hours, so there has to be substance somewhere in there, and he might have just cut it out. We're not sure.
Watch out for substance! Incoming substance!
But yeah, I could watch the fuck out of that film. I just, well, more likely the later half, because it is a bit of a long film. So,
yeah, again, maybe the Seven Swords TV series will improve it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'd like to watch a lot of that film over and over. I think just mainly the final fights at the end's just pretty damn fun.
Michael Wong's cameo you must have watched many times.
Yeah, actually just reminded me he was in it.
And dubbed, so we couldn't hear his wonderful voice. Aww. Imagine that, hearing him speak English and Cantonese in that...
In a period dragon film.
Yeah.
Could I be a sword as well? No, stab.
What is this strange language?
Okay, so we're talking style over substance here.
Yep.
Okay, well I've got... three films that spring to mind.
Okay.
I see, the main problem is most of the films I watch are old school kung fu films that are really low budget and don't have any style. So it's a bit hard to have style that overcomes substance. So it's all modern films. The first thing that popped into my head was Silver Hawk.
Oh.
Oh, I have that on my pile. I'm looking forward to that.
Michelle Yeoh film.
Jingle Ma.
Directed by, unsurprisingly, by a cinematographer, Jingle Ma, and I believe it's got Luke Goss. And is it Luke or Matt? It's Luke, isn't it?
Yeah.
Luke Goss used to be in a shit Brit boy band, Bros.
He's quite talented, though. He in, you know, as a, he's been getting good reviews for whatever movies he's been doing, like Blade 2 and stuff like that. So
he is pretty good in Blade 2, and I hear he can actually he can scrap a bit, as evidenced by Hellboy 2 The Golden Army, which he's supposed to be very good in. But okay. Silverhawk starts off promisingly. In the first like 20 minutes to half an hour,
really?
I think it, yeah, this is alright. It's I'm quite enjoying it. I'm getting into the characters. It's going somewhere. It doesn't go anywhere.
As soon as she puts on that that disguise, then it's downhill.
It starts off in that disguise. That's what I thought was bad from the beginning. It was
yeah, the first action scene that's supposed to make you go, whoa, I'm well into this, that's pretty shit. But just the build up, the first act isn't too bad. I was you know, quite enjoying it, but then second, third, nah, rubbish. Then the other film I was going to mention was, once again, I think unsurprisingly, a cinematographer turned director, which would be A Man Called Hero.
All right.
Starring your boyfriend.
Fuck you, you little bastard.
Shu-Chi as well, and I think you imbues in it for a little bit. I'm not going to say too much about this film, because I only actually managed to watch like 20 minutes.
That's okay, I've seen all, so I can fill you in.
I only managed to watch 20 minutes because it was crap.
Yeah, but you missed the best bit at the end. You get to see Ekin Chen, this other dude, trashed as such a liberty.
Mm,
not the real one, just a CGI one, but still, you get to see the whole thing just full of holes. It's just been shelled.
Yeah. Thing is, I'd have to watch the other like hour and 20 minutes to get to that point.
Good point.
And Stu and Ken know my feelings on fast forwarding through a film.
Mike Leader does.
Yes.
Indeed.
Another film that actually came to mind for me is Dragon Tiger Gate. That film's like being glossed over with a spoon, but it's still, to me, like, sure, it's style over substance, but I love this style. I'll be more than happy to sit and watch this, Goss.
Well, that's the kind.
Seven times, haven't you?
I'm getting it at least.
That film is awesome to look at. It's like a moving painting.
Mhm.
But it just left me absolutely and totally cold. Emotionally, I don't think there's anything to that film whatsoever.
Absolutely agree on that.
It's kind of, you know, it's, I don't know what it's trying to do. I think it's trying to be like really intelligent in that art housey kind of way, which half the time just kind of leaves you going, huh? But it looks fantastic. So I watched it and kind of enjoyed it on one level, but really I felt kind of, you know, shortchanged somehow, left wanting.
Hmm.
Yeah, even House of Flying Daggers was better in that regard, because it had a tiny, tiny bit more story to it to engage in. I kind of got what it was about. A hero. Hmm. Exactly my sentiment as well, Mike. Yeah, I came out feeling, you know, like, well, I saw pretty colors but little else.
Interesting. Is that your ultimate choice, nothing else, Mike?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, Jim, what do you think?
See, going for ultimate substance, I'd probably say something like New Dragon Gate Inn. It's very plain, boring, but it looks pretty, kind of like a Monet.
Okay.
Donnie Yen as a eunuch?
Yes. He keeps his clothes on throughout the whole film. I think you get to see his bones at the end of it.
You get to see his boner?
Bones! Mike, get your fucking mind at the gutter.
Hey, Jim.
I think it's there. It was several years ago when I actually saw it, so I can't really remember much about it. I just remember being bored throughout the whole thing, but being mesmerized by the prettiness and the dullness of it. And at the end, I think it's Donnie Yen, gets in his fight, and you just see all this, see his bones and kind of like...
Yeah, he exploded, basically.
Hey, Jim, what's Donnie's hair look like in New Dragon Gate?
As I said, it's about 7 years ago, but from what I remember, I think he wears one of his eunuch hats for most of the film.
Have you seen New Dragon Gate in, Stu?
I got part of the swordplay box set.
Have you watched it?
I have, but I'm trying to actually think back to it, and I can't. I always remember the scene between, must be Maggie Chung and Bridget Lin, where they're kind of fighting and stripping each other at the same time. Like, using their swords. Like, I think this scene was recycled for, like, Legend of Zorro.
It's not as good as it sounds.
Yeah, I kind of agree. It's the final reel to Dragon Gate theme that has well, it's not substance really, it's an end fight, but it's really, you know, in the sand, basically amidst the sandstorm, they have this really gory fight, which is very cool. Bridget Lin, Maggie Cheung, and Donnie Yen, and all the doubles.
I think for when you watch the trailer footage of that, most of the fight is, well, when you see the fighting, probably at least 8% of it is running instead of fighting. Like running in the sand, stop, throw the swords a bit, running, swords. They could have just stood still and had a sword fight.
In the sandstorm, it's very hard.
I know, but
they have to do it.
They're running, doing like somersaults and having a sword fight. It's like you could save a lot more energy and kill them a lot quicker if you just stood there.
It's probably true, but that's probably the only way that you can fight without getting lots of sand in their eyes. After you need to be fighting for your life and for your eyes suddenly be filled with sand and you can't get it out.
Then you're fucked, pal. Stab.
That's a classic thing from old school Kung Fu.
Kicking dirt in the eyes.
When I was thinking of the scenery change, because obviously you're going to be, say, you're fighting in a forest.
Mm-hmm.
Do that for too long. You can imagine the director's like, oh man, this is getting boring. We need to move this to a new venue. You know, keep the scenery interesting. And so therefore you just have two characters randomly run and then they appear in some kind of, you know, sand pit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can fight in there for the end.
Well, I kind of was thinking on a serious note and from like a reviewing perspective, I find it difficult sometimes reading people that can't, you know, they can't give shallow experiences like a semi-decent review. They have like an internal, you know, lock that just prevents them from, this is bad, this is shallow, I can't give this a good review. But bad and shallow is sort of not a bad thing always. Mm-hmm. It can't equal a good time. So I'm always fascinated by those who have, you know, there's no example in their feeble little minds that I might as well enjoy myself. There's no voice saying that. So, I mean, that's why we're mentioning movies that kind of are bad when you look at it, but they are fun to see. I mean, I mentioned Bullet and Brain. I'm not considering that the top movie of the year, but I still had fun watching it because it had a genuine sense of fun. But people and reviewers seem to not see through that either. They just can't. They want to be proper about it. A bad film is a bad film. So I'm a bit fascinated about that myself.
Okay, moving on. Ken, have you got an underrated film segment for us this week?
Yes, I have, Stu.
Yay!
Funny that you should ask that question. Much unexpected. My battery is running out now. My robot batteries. Anyway, the movie, the underrated movie this week is called Feel It, Say It. Fairly recent, actually was made in 2006, directed by Benny Chan, and I might as well stop there because it's not the Benny Chan of A Moment of Romance and Gen X Cop's Invisible Target fame, if you will. It's actually a very infrequent director that is most known for a fucking sweet movie called Human Pork Shop.
Whoa.
Which is a Category 3 movie that was quite savage and effective. But Feel It, Say It, it is a romantic comedy. Stars Eric Cott and Candy Law. In short, Eric Cott plays a, I guess it's called a dermatologist. And his assistant is Candy Law. And their respective partners actually cheat on them there, and they end up, you know, single and alone, and get a connection that way, and start to appreciate the kind of the sync that they actually have. Which, you know, it doesn't sound like an underrated movie as such, but it was a sleeper hit for me. Benny Chan divides his time doing like quite a serious drama and being totally wacky. You know, a la the Hong Kong cinema tradition. There's like surreal vignettes with Sam Lee discussing Japanese marriage ceremonies and there's a whole host of really stupid things, fairly funny. But when all is said and done, the movie has switched from being wacky to spending a lot more time with Eric Kott and Candy Lo's character, and the movie starts to really transform, at least it did for me, into something superbly real, because these two, you know, I dare say actors really gel well together, and the characters that were lonely before that kind of find each other and like find that they have so much in common, they play it so real and so genuine. And Eric Kott is toned down, obviously Candy Lo is you know, suitably toned down as well. She's known for being slightly wacky in other movies, and the best part of the movie is when it's real. And you sort of wish that this director Benny Chan had kept this straight through line, this straightforward thing throughout the movie. But it's still, I like the fact that Hong Kong cinema can succeed one, you know, every once in a while by being this wacky and getting eventually to a human place and a romantic place, and especially when you're surprised by performance like this, because usually Eric Kott is not associated with low key. And I just found it totally mesmerizing to watch these two. I think the director really kept good track of them to make sure they didn't veer off track. And it's a fine blueprint for the kind of small Hong Kong cinema that I always push for, and feel it say it has already been forgotten, and it was never really mentioned anywhere by anyone except a few sites. But it's worth picking up. I think you'll be surprised, unless you're totally against the romantic drama comedies, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but do pick up Human Pork Chop as well, by the same director. That is a sweet film.
Sweet in the romantic comedy type way.
Ooh.
No? No?
Sweet in the category 3, pushing Ken people Wayne down toilets full of shit.
Sleazy Ken sweet.
Yes. It was actually perfect. One of those based on a real life crime things. The Hello Kitty Corporation was ended up being involved in this against their will. Because they hid body parts in Hello Kitty dolls.
Oh, fuck.
Yes, it's true. They made two movies actually on the same crime. There was a movie with Michael Wong called There's a Secret in My Soup. It's true. But obviously, when the corporation found this out, they at least in that movie pixelated all the images of the Hello Kitty dolls. In Human Pork Chop, they did not. Strange enough.
I think we just need the base of show in those two films.
Maybe that will be my solo show.
Pork Chop on fire.
I'm gonna talk about some movies, proper movies.
Mm-hmm. Pork Chop on fire.
Oh, writing that down. that would be let's say piss off, which sounds like piss off, but you know, mm-hmm, fuck off.
Ah, can't be any worse than my crew. So going on over to the plugin for this evening, I'm going to go for podcastandfire.com/forum. We've got a great community there, and we need you. Plus, there's like tidbits of deleted conversations and outtakes for you to download, like Mike's thrilling discussion on Red Belt last week. Ooh, tell him how thrilling it was, Mike.
Extremely.
Yep. So that's podcastandfire.com/forum. We've also got shelflifeclothing.com, great site there. FarEastFilms.com. The UK's number one Asian film review site. And
wait a second. I thought Will was going to be the UK's number one Asian film review site.
Yeah, then we shut down.
No, I'm talking about Podcast on Fire.
Well, we're a podcast and website.
He's going to transfer all the reviews out of Penny to make Podcast on Fire the best site for film reviews.
Jim, we can't say this on air.
Why not?
Because they're not supposed to know about this. We will conquer soon enough, don't worry. La Viva Resistance.
So in the meantime, you're going to let other people forget us and go elsewhere.
Chop.
Really, that's like going to Sainsbury's and having the Sato. It's expensive here. Get a Tesco's instead.
Okay, Jim.
Don't do it.
Jim, save your ranting.
Fine, your side, your loss.
Stick it to him, Jim.
Shut it, Mike.
No point, now he doesn't appreciate it.
I like Jim's style.
Okay, you pair of whiny bitches. Do your plug-in.
No, yeah. I haven't got any plug-ins. I can't be bothered.
All right. Jim?
I haven't got any.
Ken?
Well, let's haul myself.
You have to do three people's worth. You have to do three people's worth of plug-in.
I guess I can do that.
12 links, please.
Well, try. One of those people should visit SoGoodReviews.com. Yeah. It's a very good site.
Just
the
one?
The second one of those three people are going to visit the YouTube channel called So Good Reviews. Okay. And the third one is actually going to go to a site I have no affiliation with, but I like it anyway. www.hkcinemagic.com, which is partly a database like Hong Kong Movie Database, but they also feature quite a lot of interviews with known and unknown people. Really, they keep track of Hong Kong cinema, basically, because they have interviews with Patrick Tam, they have interviews with Bruce Leung and Bay Logan and Lawrence Lau, director of Besieged City, and quite a good movie, and helpful also in the database that every actor is accompanied by a photograph as well. So you can easily, you know, if you want to learn every actor out there, then they tend to help you in that regard. Especially all the bit actors in the Shaw Brothers movies, all the background players, they keep track of them. So hkcinemagic.com.
Great. So, I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth.
Mike.
James.
And we'll catch you next time.
Now let's fight!
I'm just in the mood to get these bitches off my podcast.
You were on the top, dude. You would have kicked us off ages ago.
Mm-hmm. So, goodbye, yeah. Jim.
Good point, Jim.
Goodbye, Mike. Hello, Ken.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well, at least it just now sounds like a waterfall going off.
I think it must be because I had a couple of windows open. Because I was getting the info for the Korean DVDs.
What, was somebody outside shouting info into you?
No, I mean, as in, I had a couple of windows up.
Oh, right, I thought you said you had your windows open. It's like, why would, what is it, because it's windy outside?
Yeah, pointing to my Korean neighbours.
Jim!
Jim!
He's just hanging out the window. I was like, oh, yeah, the one with the fox.